Peter lives in Charlottesville. He didn't want me to use his real name because he's afraid of becoming a target. He was one of the counter-protesters that President Trump referred to out on the front lines on Saturday.
They came charging with clubs in their hands, swinging clubs.
Peter didn't actually seem that intimidating to me, though. He's slight, has a little bit of acne, gets nerdy when talking about philosophy. I first reached out to him back in July on Skype because I wanted to know about this movement he's a part of. It's called Antifa, short for anti-fascist.
For me, Antifa means just a movement that's dedicated to resisting all forms of oppression.
Different members of Antifa can believe different things. Lots of people I talk to even pronounce the name differently. But the one thing they all have in common is they believe it's important to keep racists from expressing their views in public. That can mean publicly shaming them or even physically confronting them. In February, in Berkeley, Antifa activists in masks broke store windows and threw rocks and Molotov cocktails at the police. It was during a protest against a planned speech by right-wing provocateur Milo Yiannopoulos. Peter says he got involved in Antifa in college. He's going into his junior year. Antifa is a movement with a long history. It began in Europe in the 1920s and 30s when leftist groups formed militias to fight fascist armies out on the streets. And now, well, it's growing again.
I know for me, certainly, I really would not have considered any of this kind of organizing to even be necessary before Donald Trump was elected.
I met up with Peter at the rally in Charlottesville after the police shut it down and people were starting to disperse. I asked him about what things were like out there on the front lines.
I mean, the whole thing has been scary. Like, anybody who's telling you otherwise is lying through their teeth. This entire thing has been pretty terrifying.
Peter said people on both sides were throwing things like water bottles. His hands were stained from overturning a tear gas canister. We only talked for a few minutes. He told me that he heard white supremacists were gathering in a different park, and he was going there next.
I mean, there are still a lot of people here that we don't want here. And, you know, so hopefully the events of the rest of the day and maybe going into tomorrow a little bit will convince them that they don't want to come back.
A couple hours later, Peter texted that he was in the hospital. He had been one of those hit by the car that drove into a group of counter-protesters, killing one woman and injuring 19. His injuries were minor, just cuts and bruises, and he was home by the end of the day. He was lucky. The videos and photos were horrific. They showed people flying through the air, shoes scattering the sidewalk. I called up Peter after President Trump made his remarks about Charlottesville on Tuesday. Peter hadn't seen the news, so I summarized it for him, wondering how he would react.
Wow, that's a lot.
He sounded different from the first time we talked, a little angrier, but also a little gentler at the same time. I asked him about the car attack, but he said that he's had to describe it too many times already.
It's been a lot of talking about it, and I've driven past the memorial site quite a few times, and it's still, it's a little bit too hard to see and to talk about too much right now.
I asked him about how he thought this would affect him from now on.
For better or for worse, this is definitely going to be one of the most significant moments in my life, I think, and it hasn't managed to break me. I hope to come out of this with lessons on how to be stronger and how to be better, how to keep people safer, and just hopefully turn this horrific experience into something I can take away some positives from.
How do we keep people safer? I'm not sure I agree with Peter's answer that sometimes that might require violence, but I think he has the right question. For The World, I'm Lydia Jean Cott.